Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
He started here. He is here. No one knows New York better. Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
One hand in the air for the big city. Street lights, big dreams, all looking pretty. No place in the world that can compare. Put your lighters in the air, everybody say yeah.
Good morning, New York. It is a beautiful morning. Brilliant sunshine, pleasant, maybe record-setting temperatures. Hiking past the trees in Central Park, they are taking their time, shedding the still colorful leaves, clinging to their branches, all of it making me happy to still be alive. And living in the city at the center of the world. Good morning to you. Good morning, Noam Layden. How are you doing,
buddy? Good morning, Mr. Geraldo. I'm doing just great.
Doesn't it make you feel optimistic? It does make.
This time of year always does. Absolutely.
Brings me to Bill de Blasio. I have to go from the upper to the downer right away. So we have our first progressive liberal socialist mayor since David Dinkins 2 decades ago. I mean, a wonderful family. I'm really rooting for him to succeed, although I would not have voted for him. I was still a Jersey resident then. Now I'm in New York. I would not have voted for him, but I was definitely rooting for him to succeed. He succeeds. We all succeed, in a sense. Elected 2 years ago, overwhelmingly, but with an underwhelming record low turnout of 24% of all eligible voters. So barely a million of us out of the 4.3 million registered voters actually bothering to cast ballots. 24%, so that's pretty lame. One out of four eligible voters actually getting out there to vote. Since then, de Blasio, as you may have heard, and we're going to talk national polls in a bit, but locally, he's suffered from a dramatically plunging approval rating among New Yorkers. He's down to 38%. So a guy elected with almost 75% of the vote is now down to 38% of the vote. He's losing Black and Latino support that were the foundation stones of his election. So what the hell's going on? That's my first question to you all this morning. What is it this morning? Is it lover's remorse? I mean, he had that press conference yesterday. He's kind of complaining about it. I want to get to that press conference. He's dismissing the poll. And he's saying, hey, I brought in expanded pre-K. I lowered the overall crime rate. I stimulated job growth. Why am I so unpopular? Well, I want you to tell me why you think he is so unpopular. But let me just read you. I don't usually, but yesterday I read you the editorial from the Daily News. Today, let me read you some of the letters in the New York Post about de Blasio and the dumps. Here's one. After overwhelmingly electing an incompetent ideologue as mayor, many voters now are complaining that under his bumbling leadership, the city's going to hell in a handbasket. If you elect a turkey, don't complain if all it does well is gobble. That's from Edward Hockman. Pretty good. Mayor de Blasio's staff is trying to say he's constantly out of town working to end income inequality. Give me a break. He's a one percenter. Traveling all over the world with his family seems to be his primary agenda instead of worrying about the city's problems. That's George Coppola in Whippany, New Jersey. What's happening to our great city under de Blasio's reign is pathetic. His ratings continue to drop. But let's remember this is that in the last election, only 24% of registered voters actually voted. As typical of New Yorkers, they voted for a party, not a qualified person. That's Judy Myers. So, Noam, you did a little research, a little probing there about New Yorkers and our mayor. What are they saying?
You know, this is a fascinating poll and for a bunch of different reasons. First of all, the city's in great shape. If you watched the NYPD and Commissioner Bill Bratton the other day coming out with the crime stats in October, it was one of the safest Octobers ever in New York. Goes back 20 years, maybe more. Safest time in New York. The economy is kicking. You can't get a hotel room here in New York City. You can't get a ticket to a Broadway show. The restaurants are full. So when you look at all those things, you would say, geez, wouldn't you think that the mayor would be able to take some credit for all that? But this poll is showing no, he's not. And he's languishing. He was at 44% approval rating back in May. So that's just a couple months back. Today, he's at 38%. And it looks like the numbers are going to go down even more. And I think what's most troubling and has to be, and the mayor won't admit to this, but what has to be the most troubling to the de Blasio administration is that he's lost big time numbers with the base that got him there, African-Americans and Latinos. With African-Americans, his approval rating is down 9% from that poll in May. And with Latinos, it's down 12% from that poll. So then you have to come up, what is going on if the city is kicking, minus homelessness, right? I mean, there's a homelessness problem, and he's willing to admit there is. Minus that homelessness problem, why do people think this mayor is not doing a good job? You said it. He delivered on pre-K. That was one of his promises. He delivered in part on the $15 an hour wage, which he promised when he was running. So he's delivered on two or three of the big ticket items he talked about in his campaign. So why don't they like this mayor? Well, some of the things and some of the responses they were getting in this poll is, and over again, is that people found him to be smug. So it wasn't smug. Even a matter of his politics. It wasn't a matter of his politics. They just don't like him, which is fascinating because if you don't like somebody, how do you turn that around? I mean, if he's doing everything he promised he'd do to his base, and his base is already saying they don't like him, what happens 2 years from now when he decides to run again?
Well, he's got to run against somebody, though. There's plenty of people running for president, for example. Who's going to run as a qualified? Forget about the Republican. You've got will any Democrats challenge him? Will Eric Adams, for instance, the ex-hero cop, now the borough president, will he challenge him? Who will it be? Will it be Jumaane Williams, our friend on the city council? Who's going to have the guts? Will Ruben Diaz up in the Bronx? Who's going to have the guts to challenge him? I don't see anyone really stepping up to the plate, not even getting to the Republican side. Who's going to do it? You need a multi-millionaire to self-finance his own campaign to take on de Blasio in a city that is overwhelmingly Democratic.
But you get the sense that if he continues to be wounded in these polls and the numbers continue to plummet, that someone's going to have to step forward and take him on. Now, of course, in New York, and as you've seen it over the years, it's all about party unity when it comes to the Democratic side. But you'll remember, de Blasio was the guy at the end of the day who won the primaries. But remember how many people he was running against. There were 7, 8, 10 candidates at one point in the race for mayor. And he happened just to be the last guy standing. So maybe somebody would not think.
It was more than that, Noam. It was the fact that, remember Dante with the hair?
Well, that's true.
He was such a, that came on so strong, he suddenly became the black candidate, in the sense, and it energized, I think, the African-American community. Latinos liked him because of his progressive stances on various issues. I think he played it pretty well, split the vote, and now what I can't see is why is he, smugness, is that a reason a man is unpopular? I don't know.
Well, and the other thing, and you mentioned this also as well, is not just the smugness, but what also kept coming up often in this poll was that he's taken to the national stage, right? He's been down in Washington petitioning for low-wage workers. He's trying to set up this symposium in Iowa for the presidential candidates to stop by. And people look at that and they say, wait a minute, you've only been in office just 2 years. What are you doing taking to the the national stage. This is the national stage right here in New York. You should be paying attention to the Big Apple.
All right, take Michael in New York. Michael, what are you thinking about, Michael?
Hello. If de Blasio wants to get his poll numbers up and get reelected, this is what I suggest he does, and I'm sure he's listening to you. I would, if I was him, I would lower all MTA and Long Island Railroad fares by 70%, reduce the sales tax in New York to 6%, water and property taxes should go down by 40%, and eliminate that Midtown Tunnel toll. It's about the high cost of living in New York. It's not about his smugness. It's about money. The good, hardworking people of New York, he should allow them to keep more of their hard-earned money.
You're not going to get a break on the subways. You're not going to get a break on the tolls. If anything, tolls are going to expand.
Well, then he's going to lose. Nothing,
for no other reason than traffic control. But, no, you've got a couple of clips. Let me hear.
He's going to lose.
Here's what some of the voters said, and also de Blasio's response to this poll.
Broken promises. Broken promises. You don't keep the promises, this is what's going to happen.
I did vote for him. Based on what I'm seeing right now, I would not vote for him again.
And these numbers reflect a sense that at his core, there's been an erosion, and it's been among those groups, African Americans and Latinos, who are the ones who gave him that huge victory just 2 years ago.
Polls come and go. There's no question about the work being done and the impact it is having on people. That's what matters, and I know it will be felt.
You know, I think that rather than smugness, I think that upon closer examination, you get the feeling. I mean, I just get the feeling that he is just going through the motions, that he's kind of memorized the business of politics. And when he has a response, it is almost an automatic response. It almost came out of, political democratic socialism 101 in Lehman College.
I disagree with you. I think he has this bold program, the pre-K thing. He got it done awfully fast. He has this interesting program of trying to create low-income housing. I mean, this is all playing to that base that seems to be walking away from him. And again, he was instrumental, absolutely instrumental in getting these fast food workers a $15 an hour wage that'll start sometime next year. And he's pushing for the same, of course, for all minimum wage workers across New York City. So he's delivering to the base,
yes,
but the base
is responding.
Yes, he's
done that. Hold it a second. He's done that. There's no doubt, but he did it. He tried to get rid of the horses in Central Park to pay back, and it was revealed to pay back political donors. He did the universal pre-K, but how much of that was to screw the charter school movement and to show that he was the one who was the educational reformer? And in terms of the minimum wage, the citywide minimum wage, that's a no-brainer. I mean, this is New York, of course, there is real power in the minority community that generally staffs these fast food places. I think that what you're seeing is the mayor may be an empty suit. I mean, I don't mean, like I said, I want him to succeed. I want to hear from you. We're going to do one more segment on the mayor. Why do you think the mayor is in some ways floundering when the city is doing so well? The disconnect is amazing to me between the accomplishments, or at least the state of the city and the state of people's feeling about the man who runs this city. Ron in Huntington's on the line. We're talking about Mayor Bill de Blasio. Why is he languishing in the polls? The city doing so well. On the one hand, the mayor now down to 38% approval. That's about half of the percentage that voted for him for mayor. So, Ron, what's up?
I noticed your opening comment that you stated that he was a liberal progressive mayor and you would not have voted for him, but you said that you hoped he succeeded. How do you rationalize that?
Well, I want him to succeed because I want the city to do well. I want people to be employed. I want crime to be down. I'm a very civic-minded person. I love this town. I was born here.
Everybody would want the city or the country to succeed. But if you have somebody in there that you don't agree with his policies, you're not saying that.
I'm not. I remember in the. I got you. I remember in the Cold War, people used to cheer on train crashes in the Soviet Union or a plane crash in the Soviet Union. Anything bad, a storm that hits China, used to cheer it on. I mean, that's kind of a pathetic way of thinking. I want the city to do well. Now, if I were mayor, I would have a whole different approach to life than Bill de Blasio has. For example, I would be much more supportive of the cops. I and Noam and I constantly disagree about this. I would still have stop and frisk in the arsenal of community policing. I would privatize public housing. I think that's the best way forward for public housing. I would definitely change that. It is, there is a Republican way of doing things and a Democratic way of doing things. You know, that brings me, Noam, interestingly, to the elections. You see, the Republicans, including the governor of Kentucky, all these Tea Party people, all the Republicans throughout the old Confederacy, the Deep South, from Kentucky all the way down and around throughout the South, Republicans won virtually every race they contested. But here, it seems, it was exactly the opposite. Democrats, am I not right? Democrats won every single, all the DAs. I mean,
that's right.
Yeah, do you have a list handy?
Give me I one. Do. Yeah, yeah. Staten Island, McMahon. In the Bronx, you have the first ever woman. In Queens, well, it's the same district attorney we've always had. He won re-election unopposed. Out on Long Island, you had Singa, who won. Asingas, rather.
The DA in Nassau County.
Right, Mattawa Asingas won. Beat a Republican who that people thought was going to win, Kate Murray.
Yeah, she was way behind, I thought.
And, so you had Democrats, and then even in New Jersey, same thing. Democrats are winning back some seats in the Assembly. So it was a big night for Democrats in New Jersey as well.
So isn't that weird? So on the one hand, you have up north, the Northeast, Democrats, the bluest of blue. And then everywhere else, the reddest of red. I mean, this election is going to show a very, very divided country yet again. It's going to be fascinating to watch. I want to shift to that national scene now. I mean, de Blasio is as de Blasio is. It's 2 years till the race. I'd love to see someone get in that's going to make it interesting. I don't see anyone on the horizon, at least no one who has any dough. But speaking of dough, speaking about the big race, the Quinnipiac poll, and I know that, I'm telling you, I know that I give you a spulkus when I, how do you say it?
Yeah, you said it right. Spulkus.
Spulkus.
You got it right.
You want to define it?
Like an upset stomach.
Yeah.
It's the best way, I guess, to describe
because
it.
It's such a rocky ride in terms of the national election with 97 days before the first ballot is cast. Trump's still on top, according to Quinnipiac. Last time he had 25, this time he has 24. So basically, Trump is exactly as strong as he was last month, according to the well-respected, well-regarded Quinnipiac poll. The news starts in the number two spot on down. Carson was at 17, now he's at 23. So you have Trump 24, Carson 23. So that is a virtual tie. But the big news is, in number three, that has changed from a month ago. Number three is Rubio. Rubio is up from 9 to 14%. Then you have Cruz, the other 44-year-old Cuban-American hard right winger. He's up from 7 to 13%. But how are all these guys gaining, Carson, Rubio, and Cruz? It is at the expense of Jeb Bush, who is absolutely disappearing. He was at 10% in September and in third place. Now he's in fifth place with 4%. So why is Bush now disappearing? And conversely, why is Rubio surging? So you have Rubio, here's Rubio.
And you keep saying that you believe that the dynamic at the top of those numbers, Trump and Carson, is going to change in the coming months. What is going to change it? What is the catalyst?
Yeah, I think ultimately, as voters begin to zero in, they're going to realize a couple things. We now have a choice to make about who's going to be the leader of this country in the 21st century. And I'm confident that if we can continue to communicate who we are, what we'll do, if given this chance, we're going to continue to improve. These polls will go up and down. And as I've said, historically, we know that these polls in the week before the election can change dramatically. So we're going to continue to do what we're doing. That's all I can control, is my campaign and what we talk about. And we're going to continue to talk about our vision for America's future and our plan to get us there. And I have confidence the voters are going to choose us in the end. It'll take a while. It won't be overnight. But look, the polls are, at this point, they're going to be all over the place. I'm not too excited about them one way or the other.
One last quick question for you. Jeb kind of went after you in the last debate. Do you expect him to do that again? He's talking a lot tougher in recent days, and there's a new Jeb. Jeb can fix it is the motto. What do you think?
Well, I disagree that by attacking me, he's going to be better off in this campaign. But obviously someone in his campaign staff has convinced him that he needs to attack me in order to do better. And that's their right. They can choose that. I control my campaign. My campaign isn't going to be about attacking any other Republicans. My campaign is going to be about what I'll do given the chance to be president. So I'm going to continue to focus on that because that's what the people at home deserve. That's what they deserve for us to be fighting about.
Marco Rubio. And isn't it ironic that Marco Rubio and Ted Cruz are both 44 and both Cuban-American, both doing so well in the Republican primary process so far? But Rubio is going to be increasingly, and I'll play some of Trump's attacks on him. I think everyone's now going to gang up on Rubio. He has bad personal credit. He maxed out his credit cards, things of that nature. So the attacks on Rubio are just being mounted. But what do you think?
According to a new national poll, Dr. Ben Carson is leading the field of Republican candidates now by his largest margin yet. He is in first place with 29%. Donald Trump is now in second with 23%. And this is historic because this is the first time the Republican field has ever been led by an African-American candidate who appears to be asleep at all times.
A new national poll found that Ben Carson is now ahead of Donald Trump by 6 points in the Republican race. Finally proving that you can literally sleep your way to the top.
You see the angle there, no doubt. Yeah. Noam. Yeah. They picture Dr. Ben Carson, first Jimmy Kimmel, then Jimmy Fallon. Dr. Carson is kind of a sleepwalking his way to the top. Of course, that poll they're referencing was 2-3 days ago. Now we're back to polls that continue to show Trump narrowly ahead. Quinnipiac Today's poll has Trump at 23. Trump at 24, Carson at 23, Rubio 14, Cruz 13. So they're both in double digits now, number 3 and 4. And Jeb Bush woefully back in fifth place now with just 4% of the vote. And, you know, how could you vote? I hate to say this because, you know, I don't like to be just mean for mean's sake, but he seems, you know, Carson may seem to be too mellow for school. But Jeb Bush just is so boring. He's just boring. He's just, you know, just picture him hearing his press conferences for the next 4 years. I don't think so. Here's Frank in Blue Point. Thanks for calling 866 Geraldo. Frank, you my first call, my second call. What's up? What do you think?
I'm your first call. Geraldo, as far as Jeb Bush, and you're saying you just nailed it, actually, why he's falling in the polls. He's, the more exposure he gets, the more people see that he's ineffective and weak. As you said the other day, and I think you also said stupid, but that's fine.
I mean, I don't think he's stupid.
Exposure is what kills him. Pardon me?
I don't think, all these guys are smart. They're all successful enough to be at the top of their respective fields, whatever it is. I definitely do not think any of them are. Or we have Trump live. Yeah, let's take Trump is speaking right now. He's in New Hampshire.
He had a total monopoly. They had one company with a total monopoly on marijuana and the profits. How dumb is that? And that's probably why it failed.
He's but talking about the Ohio referendum to legalize marijuana. It failed. It failed.
I think that's one of the reasons.
Bucking the national trend. He's saying why? Because it was flawed.
I think it was a good result. I loved what happened in Kentucky. Yeah. And he's a good guy.
About the election of
and
the
they gave
Tea Party
me a lot
governor.
Of credit for that one. I don't deserve the credit. But there is something happening, folks. I will tell you. Yeah. There is something happening.
Trump. Talking Trump about the surge of Tea Party and hard right
numbers.
Candidates.
I sent you some nice numbers.
Yeah. Well, Mr. Okay. Trump, you are on top of the polls here in New Hampshire, but not in Iowa. What is going on in Iowa? Why are you?
Well, you haven't read the polls in Iowa, obviously. I'm not surprised that question. Yesterday's poll came out, and I was two polls. I'm now in top in Iowa too. Two polls came out, and now I'm leading Iowa again. So we're happy with it. I think we're going to do great in New Hampshire. I think New Hampshire. We had a tremendous poll a couple of days ago. It was 32% versus, what was it, 12 or something? We were way up in New Hampshire. So we're very happy with the New Hampshire. And you know what? I love the people of New Hampshire. They're just incredible people. When you get a crowd like this that I didn't really know about, this is... I came here to file because I feel you have to come here to file. And you have this many people show up on a morning. And most of these people are working. I know that. He's a hard, as they
all right,
say,
Trump
he's
goes
a hard
to
worker.
New Hampshire to officially file for the
these
primary. Surrounded by an enthusiastic crowd, he's clearly feeling ebullient And he's also looking over his shoulder at Marco Rubio's surge. So right here at Fox News this morning, Trump went all out against Rubio. Here he is.
Marco has had tremendous problems with his credit card. He is very weak on immigration, illegal immigration. I mean, he's, as far as he's concerned, the Gang of Eight was a disaster.
But
he was friends with Chuck Schumer and everybody.
Rich,
no, I'm not saying
not
it.
In your league.
I'm not saying it. What I'm saying is he has not handled his financial affairs very well. You look at his credit cards, you look at his problems, and I said he was a lightweight.
All right, so Trump goes all out. It's the front page of the Washington Post also. Rubio rises, becomes a target. Rivals appear to sense a threat. Trump, Bush attack Rubio's finances and his missed votes. So what do you, I've never asked you what you think, ladies and gentlemen, of Marco Rubio. Let me know. What is the difference between him and Ted Cruz? You could let me know that, too. Here's Will in the Bronx. Thanks for calling 866-RLO. Will, what's
hey,
on your mind, buddy?
How you doing, Araldo? Look here. You say you're a law-abiding guy and you back the cops and all that. Let me just say this, man. You seem to be against public housing, which means you would put a whole lot of other people who's been disenfranchised.
Oh, no, I absolutely am.
Well, you say
absolutely in favor of affordable housing, but what I want is for the tenants to own there are apartments in public housing.
Yeah, well, you got to define that because the way you're making it sound like you want to.
No, you haven't been listening, Will. This is what I want to do. I'll tell you right now. Listen up. This is what I want to do. I want to set a price on those apartments, like where you had the shooting of Officer Holder, 102nd Street. My goodness, what would the market rate on that be? That you pay $1 million for a three bedroom in that apartment with views of the East River and all the rest of it.
Yeah,
I say set a very low price. You you make the maintenance about what the rent is now, but you give ownership to those tenants, sweat equity, they pay for it over time. But I would bet you will see those lobbies cleaned up. You'll see those elevators working. No one's going to be pissing anywhere. You're not going to have thugs hanging out anywhere. You're not going to have gang bangers confronting each other. If those tenants owned those apartments,
right,
it would be a
points.
Whole different scene.
Two more points. Listen. On the governor thing, the governor and the mayor. The governor has always been a bitchy type guy ever since he was young.
Andrew Cuomo.
He's always had an enemy somewhere. He was jabbing and jabbing back and forth with. So y'all got to.
He's very different than his dad, who I know.
Yeah, he's very, very thin skin. And as far as the what you call it, the political race, the Republicans doing what they're doing, all of this infighting and all of that craziness. Let me tell you something. What's an, Hillary's going to walk right in. Simple as that. Because even though you get these guys up in the poll, they still look all discombobulated, man. You know, really.
Well, what do you think of Ben Carson? Just curious.
Well, I'll be honest. He's not going in the door. He's really not.
I didn't ask you for your prediction. I asked you what you think of him.
Well, personally, I think he's a very successful guy. I think he's a nice guy, but I think he says what he thinks that the rich white Americans want to hear. He's the most unthreatening cat you would find since Sammy Davis Jr.
Okay. That's pretty astute. I appreciate that, Will. Thank you. All right, here's Rich in White Plains. What are you thinking about, buddy? Hello, Rich.
Geraldo.
Yeah, man, you're on.
Yeah, we have that satellite delay. Yeah, with regard to the debate format, it's really simple to understand that because networks are motivated by ratings, you can't have them run the debates because the temptation to have those red meat gotcha question is always going to be there. The networks can broadcast the debate, but you'd have to have somebody like the Heritage Foundation or Hillsdale College battle it out with the rhinos for the format.
I disagree. I think that with the debates, and thanks, I appreciate it. The thing about the debates and ratings, these are great shows. People crave live TV. That's why they've moved away from television, generally speaking. They're into Netflix and all this. My wife watches these binge-watching and all the rest of it. The total viewership of television is way down, but what do they watch? What do folks watch on TV? You watch the news because it's live. You watch football games because they're live. And you watch these debates. Why? These debates are like soap operas playing out there. Oh, Trump is up and he's watching Rubio over his shoulder. And here's Dr. Ben Carson. And is he falling asleep or is he being brilliant You know, and look at Jeb Bush, the incredible shrinking candidate, you know, the death spiral. You know, you watch all of these mini dramas being played out, and it is fascinating television. Now, the problem is that there has been, since the very first debate, there has been the gotcha question. There has been the tendency of some of the moderators, not all, but some of the moderators, to ask a question that shines a brilliant light on them. You know, look who managed to embarrass the candidate or got him in a contradiction or, you know, in some other way artfully revealed. You know, you got him off the candidate, you got them off the stump speech. You understand the motivation of the moderator. What the last thing you want to do when you're interviewing a politician who's running for office is ask them a question where they can give you a memorized stump speech canned answer. And it takes up 30 seconds or 45 seconds of unadulterated, you know, promotion. And it's very difficult. That's why you have the tendency to ask the follow-up question, to step on the person answering the question after the first 3 minutes to or first, you know, 3 seconds to just go, 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 because you're desperate to make news, to make yourself look good, even though that is not your announced intention, but also to make yourself look smarter than the candidate or to make yourself be the representative of those in the audience, the viewing audience, who want desperately for whoever is speaking to be minimized. So there's a lot of contradictory forces at play, but I think they're great shows, and I think trying to mess with who's the moderator, and it should only be you know, Mark Levin when it's a conservative, and what, Paul Begala or some liberal, you know, when it's a Democrat. I think that's bogus. I think the networks have to decide and let the audience filter. We're talking both the decline and fall of Mayor de Blasio and the rise of Marco Rubio on the federal level. You know, I've been thinking about it, Noam. I think that if I were to point my finger at the one thing that New Yorkers are most concerned about and the one thing affecting in a negative way Bill de Blasio's popularity, I would say it's the rise of homelessness. I would say it's the rise of visible disorder, even though crime is leveled off or is even down over previous record lows. The fact that you see homeless people, you see vagrancy, you see drug-addled or alcohol-addled people begging. You see back at, you know, at 96th Street when you get on the FDR, there's always a guy there to wash your windows with a dirty rag or just a panhandle. At every place where traffic backs up, you see somebody with a cup, I'm homeless, I'm starving, I'm desperate. I mean, a lot of them are just professional beggars. To me, that is the most visible signal that the city administration is not functioning in the way it should be. And I would postulate, if I may use that phrase, that is what is affecting in a negative way de Blasio's popularity. What do you think?
You know, it is. It's that quality of life issue. I mean, Rudy Giuliani learned it early on in his administration, and that's why he was so successful. You know, what it is you've seen it when we walk around Penn Station here. There's these guys nodding in the planters. They're high on heroin. And while they're probably harmless, we don't know that for sure. And so I know when I come here in the early morning and I see those guys lying out on the street, it makes me feel uneasy. I don't like it. And, you know, there's a bit of me, of course, I feel sorry for them. But the other half of me says, what are they doing there? Why are they lying in the streets? Why isn't anybody helping them?
Jim in Brooklyn, thanks for calling 866 Geraldo. What's on your mind this morning?
Good morning, Geraldo.
Hi, buddy.
I want to tell you, it's becoming a little bit annoying, your ethnic cheerleading. Right now, you happen to be pushing Rubio as if he's made this gigantic leap or something.
And what ethnic affiliation do I have with Donald Trump, who most people accuse me of pushing? I mean, what a ridiculous statement.
I
honor my listeners, but that to me is a preposterous stereotyping. You got some problems, buddy.
May I finish my comment, please?
You got about 20 seconds. You better hurry.
Okay, like a few weeks ago on The View, you made a comment, and another guy there said a scandalette. The next day, you're on the radio saying you invented a new term. You know,
How is that ethnic cheerleader?
My name is Dr. Howard. I've recommended Balance of Nature for over 15 years because of the excellent results I see in my patients. Balance of Nature doesn't make any claims of treating or curing any particular disease, but I think the results speak for themselves.
I hate veggies, so this was a perfect way to get vitamins and veggies that worked with my body.
I do feel better, but as far as health-wise goes, if I used to have to get up in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom, I'm not doing that anymore. The ringing in my ear is a lot less than what it used to be. Those are the two things right away that I notice, and I'm not as hungry as I used to be also.
When you can give your body a full variety of 31 different fruits and vegetables in their 100% natural, whole food form, you receive the unmatched balance of nutrition. Call toll-free 800-246-8751. That's 800-246-8751. Or go online to balanceofnature.com and be sure to enter promo code WABC.
Attention homeowners, sell your home right now, all cash, as is, commission-free. It doesn't matter what you owe, condition, or location. Call myHomeSale.com and get an offer right over the phone in 10 minutes and cash in 10 days. 800-800-1506. 800-800-1506. Your house could be wrecked, burned down, flooded, hurricane ravaged, or occupied by non-paying tenants, even squatters. Maybe your house is mint, an investment property, an estate sale, even a divorce sale, and you want to sell and get quick cash. Call and get an offer in 10 minutes and cash in 10 days. 800-800-1506. 800-800-1506. Maybe you haven't made your payments in years. Maybe you owe more than your house is worth. Residential, mixed use, commercial, even vacant land. Money is no object. Call and get an offer right over the phone in 10 minutes and cash in 10 days. 800-800-1506. 800-800-1506. MyHomeSale.com is a marketing and lead generation system owned by 334 Marketing. Your calls will be answered by licensed real estate professionals who have licensed the use of this advertisement. Results vary. No promise.
All right, we got to wise these people up. Yep. All right, so here's the first demand. Stop complaining.
Yeah, my feelings.
Come on! You guys are starting to sound like a bunch of Democrats out there. Here's the next demand. Answer the question. It's not that hard. Here's an example. Fallon, what would you do to fix the deep ideological divide in this country?
Pizza party.
All right, here's the third demand. Wrap it up. Keep it pithy. They give you a time limit for a reason. This goes for the Democrats, too. You're answering a question, not accepting an Oscar. Watch this. Fallon, what would you do if you were president? What would your first act be?
Pizza party.
We're dealing with a lot of depth here. But yeah. Anyway, my last demand. Trump, you got to take it down, man. Oh, it's fun. I know it's fun. But he blew out my TV speakers. If anybody gets to yell that loud on Fox News, it should be me. O'Reilly doing a great job with Jimmy Fallon. We're talking debates. We're also we're talking two levels of politics today at 7 minutes after 11 o'clock on this fourth day of November. Speaking about politics, today is the day that Dwight Eisenhower beat Adlai Stevenson in 1952. Ronald Reagan on this day destroyed Jimmy Carter in 1980. And President Obama won his first term, beating John McCain in 2008. This is also two sad things. Walter Cronkite would have been 99. Today was his birthday. That's not sad. That's happy. But I remember Walter Cronkite telling me that there's going to be a time in my life when you go to a funeral every week. Time tolls. And he would have been 99. Yitzhak Rabin was assassinated on this date 20 years ago. Israel, which showed such promise in terms of its relationship with the Palestinians and the whole two-state solution and the Oslo Accords, has never been the same, never recovered from the assassination of Yitzhak Rabin by an American settler, right? Wasn't it an American settler? No?
I don't know if it was an American settler, but he got what he...
definitely a settler. I think he was American.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he wasn't, but he got what he wanted. He killed the peace process by killing Rabin.
He killed the process. Yeah. That was an assassination that will echo through the ages. You see Israel now, there's about as much chance of a two-state solution there as me getting elected president. Ain't going to happen. All right, here, before I take your calls, here is Trump on the debate. Here's Trump.
Where do you stand now as it relates to debates, moderators going forward? What is Donald Trump's plan?
Well, honestly, I don't know why that was even said, because I don't care. I mean, they give me a podium. They've asked me some very negative questions, including your Megan. They've asked me very, very disgraceful questions, frankly. And last time with Harwood, the same thing happened. They were inappropriate questions, and I take them and I do them and I do whatever I have to do, and it comes out just fine. So I don't really care.
All right, so that's Trump on Hannity's show, taking a hit at our own Megyn Kelly and reminding people about John Harwood, the CNBC moderator, who Trump said destroyed his career in that debate. I think that's probably overstating. But what do you think? All right, we'll talk politics. Let's talk on the federal level first. I'll take Ben in Brooklyn. What's up, Ben? What do you think? Thanks for calling 866-ERALDO. What's up?
Good. I want to make 2 points. First, I want to talk about Trump and the polls. And I want to point out one thing that happens with polling. After every single debate, all the pollsters want to be the first to come out with their poll. What ends up happening is they take rolling polls, and they include a couple of days before the debate, so they're not actually so accurate. For example, the NBC Wall Street Journal poll started polling on the 25th. And there's no question, prior to debates, Ben Carson really had momentum. He had the Iowa poll going for him. But I think in the debate itself, Ben Carson didn't really gain anything. If anybody gained on the right side, it was probably Ted Cruz. And Trump probably gained more from the middle from coming across as very presidential. And if we look at the Reuters Ipsos poll that actually started polling on the 28th, going to the 2nd, you actually see an increase in Trump going up to 31. And Carson.
So what's your point, Ben? Get to the bottom line. What's your point? All interesting by the arithmetic. What's up?
Everybody's all excited that Trump had a dip. I think most of the dip, if anything happened, was prior to the debate.
I agree with you. I absolutely agree with you on that point. And let me restate it. Hold it. Let me restate that. I think that when people point out that at this point, in the last cycle, Herman Cain was ahead, and Herman Cain, of course, disappeared before the Iowa caucus, and also that Hillary Clinton was ahead of Barack Obama back in 2008 at this point, only to lose, of course, to the freshman senator from Illinois in the quest for the Democratic nomination. This is different with Trump. I feel it is different. I have said it was different. This man has withstood mistakes or misstatements that would have destroyed a lesser candidate. I think that Trump is definitely the real deal. I believe that trouble from the Latino community is just beginning for Donald Trump. You'll see the rest of this week, you'll see Latino groups. I saw Gutierrez, the Puerto Rican congressman from Chicago, really laying into Trump on CNN last night. I think you'll see a lot more of that. But Trump's candidacy is amazingly resilient. Are you finished, Ben?
I agree. No, in regards to the traffic issue in New York City, I actually wanted to point out that at the end of the day, coming into the city during peak time is a commodity. It's a value. So
agreed.
Instead of just putting a tax on it, we should create, just like there's the carbon trading system, you create a credit system where everybody that registers the car has a certain amount of rights to come into the city. Now, they can use those rights or they can sell it in the free market. So what ends up happening is the price, the market is actually going to dictate the price of coming into the city in free time, in the peak periods of time.
I like that idea, but let me take it. Here's the way I would evolve it. Thanks for the smart call. I would have congestion pricing, which means you to come south of 96th Street, you got to pay money to do that in Manhattan with a car. If you're going to come anywhere in Manhattan south of 96th, or you pick the cross street. I'm not real strict about that. Let the experts pick the cross street. But you pay a toll to come to bring a vehicle into Manhattan south of whatever that street is, say 96th. But you pay a lot less on a Sunday morning than you do on a Monday morning, if you get my drift. It's really congestion pricing, but it's based on demand. It's a lot like Miami's, a lot like London's, and I think it could work. And it includes tolls on the East River bridges. I really believe that you really need that. You really need to make equity in all of the ways to get into Manhattan, make equity. Lower the tolls on the bridges that have tolls right now and tunnels that have tolls now, but impose tolls on Williamsburg Bridge. I had to go off on that, but the caller led me there. Okay, Greg in Pennsylvania, is it? What's up, man? Thanks.
Hey, Geraldo. Here's why the Republicans are going to
win. Oh, can you hold on 1 second? I just want to correct something I said. The assassin of Yitzhak Rabin was a Yemeni Israeli. His name, Yigal Amir. An Israeli Yemenite extremist who took the life of Yitzhak Rabin exactly 20 years ago today. But go ahead, Greg.
Okay, here's why the Republicans are going to win big, and this isn't reflected in the polls yet, and it's courtesy of the Democrats and the first debate. Democrats who have money, who make money and have saved money are deathly afraid of two things: the inheritance tax that was brought up at that first debate.
Agreed.
And the potential 90% tax rates. And listen to how I got onto this. I have a 91-year-old liberal Democrat mother. She calls me up the other day and says, "We're voting for Republicans." I said, "Who's we?" She lives in Short Hills. All right, they got money, millions, billions, and all her friends do. And she said, "All of us," because it's just like when terrorism, after 9/11, we voted for a Republican. He says, and they don't want to give up their money. And their grandkids and kids aren't getting the jobs they should get, and they're deathly afraid of that 90% tax rate proposal. And this all came out of that first Democrat debate. Now, this isn't in the polls yet because the media is not talking about it. They want to bury it. And I talked to a friend of mine. I'm very politically active on the Republican side in Pennsylvania. I talked to a friend of mine who runs the DNC. He has lots of contacts. He said this is a major issue. He's a six-figure income guy. He's got a couple, $3 or $4 or $5 million put away. He wants it to go to his kids. He wants his kids to be able to accumulate that kind of wealth to pass on to their kids. And here's a key. To date, and he said this, lots of Democrats haven't had any skin in the game. Like he said, he doesn't participate in Obamacare. He's got a Cadillac health care plan at work. He hasn't really, that being a Democrat hasn't cost him anything. If this is going to cost him $3 million, he's going to have to think about it.
I agree. I'm in that situation. I want to leave some wealth to my children. I don't want to spoil them. And I'm giving away a lot of it, as you know. But I think that the death tax is way too aggressive. I mean, why should you pay half of your money to the federal government when you die? Because you paid tax on it when you were alive. So it's double taxation. So I think the death tax should be reduced. I think the death tax, the inheritance tax, so-called, the inheritance tax, the estate tax, the death tax, all those things should be the same level as the income on dividend, on stocks. That I think you could dramatically simplify the tax code. I don't think it's ever going to go up to 90%. I think that it's absolutely obscene to pay more than 50% of what you earn in total taxes. You know, to pay over 50% is obscene. You should pay 50%. That should include federal, state, and local taxes. Work 6 months for the government. Work 6 months for yourself. I think that's fair. But to go beyond 50% total tax, I think, is really very unfair. Okay, let me squeeze in one more. I'm going to take Vince in Jersey. What's up, Vince? What do you think of that?
Yeah, good morning. And hello?
Yep.
Okay, I can hear you now. All right, you know, you brought up a good point about the debates and the gotcha questions, but it goes further beyond that. If you look at who these so-called moderators are, how did they let somebody like Stephanopoulos, Cokie Roberts, or even Tim Russert, who's no longer with us, I mean, he was the fairest of most of these are all political hacks. You know, Stephanopoulos is not a journalist. He's a political hack at the highest level of the Clinton campaign. So he's going to moderate a debate between Hillary and a Republican and be fair. And even if he asked the more challenging questions, you know, he would make sure that the other people on the panel, if they're all with ABC, are going to do his dirt.
But I thought, for instance, Anderson Cooper did a good job in his debate, even though he's obviously a liberal guy. He did a pretty good job. He hammered Hillary. Why don't people trust you? I think it was the first question out of the box. He hit her pretty hard. You don't have to be that person to be fair.
I'm glad you brought that up. Because if you go back to that debate, now this was a Sarah Palin moment beyond. Hillary was talking about how she kept us safe. And she goes, from those shoulder things, you know, the thing on your shoulder. She's sitting there. She's supposedly keeping us safe from shoulder-fired missiles, ground-to-air missiles, and she can't even say it. She's the shoulder thing, I think somebody, either the moderator or somebody else stood up and said, you mean the shoulder-fired? Yes, yes. I mean, that was pathetic, and you should go back and watch that because nobody made any comment.
Now, what's your point there, that they were protecting Hillary?
Absolutely, they were protecting her. You tell me.
All right. People can judge this. Vince, I got a very smart caller. I appreciate it. Man, the best audience in radio. I'm telling you, you really are people that are aware and you keep up to date on stuff, and I appreciate it. We all do. 77 WABC. Some of the other stories we're following. Welcome back, 77 WABC. Geraldo here along with Noam Layden. Did you see, Noam, that remember we were all following that Lake County Sheriff's deputy who was allegedly killed by three people? Remember everybody was manhunting for a white guy and a black guy and a gang and... Anyway, it turns out that the officer killed himself, and then staged it to look like He had died in the line of duty. He was embezzling money from a youth group that he was working with, apparently.
Yeah.
So that's pretty fascinating. And the other story out of town that I was checking out that I was deeply disturbed by is this 9-year-old who was killed in Chicago in a gang crossfire. Another 9-year-old went down, killed by gangbangers exchanging shots the way they do willy-nilly. And again, you won't hear anything from Black Lives Matter about that 9-year-old. I think that gnome is a very sad thing. It's just something that bugs the hell out of me, how they are missing the opportunity to really be the civil rights movement of the 21st century, taking on, you know, this ghetto civil war that's going on. And if it's not a cop that killed somebody, they are uninterested in the victim. I think it's appalling.
You know, and it's a wonder, what is going on in Chicago? I mean, we figured out a way to reel in the violence here in New York, so why can't they just follow some of our model to figure it out in Chicago? I mean, what is going on that the violence continues to tick up instead of down?
And, you know, Spike Lee has this movie. I'm keen to see this movie. Chirac, he calls it. It's like Chicago, Iraq.
Right.
Chirac. And it's about the violence, about the gangbangers. And I hope he doesn't glorify it the way the, you know, the Atta Compton did. The, you know, cops are all horrible and the gangsters are all, you know, wonderful rebels against oppression. And, you know, that kind of fairy tale that they tell. I'm telling you, there is an alternate reality has been created. It is the biggest missed story of our time. The whole gangster rap thing, segment of the hip-hop world created a phantasmagorical world in which you could be as bad as you could possibly be. People probably get sick of hearing me preach about this. You can be 50 Cent, you get shot 9 times, and that's great. You know, you can be a drug dealer, you can be the biggest scum dog in the projects, and then you could record a song and go on to be Jay-Z. I mean, it's just this... It has created a distortion in terms of who the role models are. It's created a distortion in terms of reality. 50 times as many young minority men are killed by other young minority men than particularly black on black and brown on brown than are ever killed by cops. I mean, it is 50, 60, even more. The percentage is so distorted, and yet you have people like our friend Elijah Cummings, the congressman from Baltimore, talking about how the civil rights era, the civil rights movement of our time is the Freddie Gray story and cops killing black men. That's not the civil rights story of our time. The civil rights story of our time is how awful it is that so many of these young men are just taking it out on each other. All right, let me squeeze in. I was talking about the tolls before we went to break. We're all over today. Eddie in Brooklyn, what's on your mind, bud?
Oh, the only way you could do tolls on the bridges if you make commercial vehicles exempt. They got to come in and make deliveries. You know, I drive a dump truck. I go over to Verrazano Bridge. It's $80-something. I go over
80,
that bridge.
How big is your truck? Now give me an idea. How big is your truck? How big is your vehicle?
It's a dump truck. It's got three axles. It's a tri-axle dump truck.
So a dump truck, you pay $80 to cross the Verrazano?
You go over that bridge with a tractor trailer, and you got an extra axle on your trailer, it could be anywhere from $160 to $175.
Jeez.
What are you going to pay for a cup of coffee with the tolls? $10 for a cup of coffee in the city?
I can barely comment. Did you know that, Noam? Did you know they were that high?
Well, I know Verrazano is the most expensive crossing in all of New York.
It's ridiculous. Why do you think so? The microphone you're talking about was delivered by a truck. So
I get it, Eddie. I get it. And, you know, it's a stunning figure. But, you know, the bottom line is that has to go into the price of the commodity. That's the only way.
Making hit stages, they receive you on. Still can't believe you're going to give anything to hear half your breath. I know you're still living your life after death.
Birthday, up, Daddy. Just 46 years old. Wow. All right. Yesterday, I mentioned the reason I haven't answered the phone in the last few minutes is I want to change the topic to this I am fascinated by, you know, Anonymous is that group of hackers that, you know, they generally speaking, you know, they get into some very private stuff and they release it. I don't feel angry at them. It's these online activists kind of, they creep me out a little bit. Sometimes they do good things, though. Anonymous, this one group of online activists, as I mentioned yesterday, has this new Operation KKK. Operation KKK, in which Anonymous is publishing lists of alleged public figures and other celebrities who are affiliated with the racist hate group, the Ku Klux Klan. Now, is it real? I don't know, but I'm seeing denials from the mayor of Lexington, Kentucky, and from the, I saw others, big-time politicians whose names have been mentioned, including the senator, the Republican senator from Indiana, Dan Coats. They deny it. The mayor denied it. The mayor of Lexington, the senator from Indiana, they denied it. They're tweeting out, but as of Monday morning, there have been four listings, 57 phone numbers that were revealed, 23 email addresses, some including spouses of the supposed KKK members. But I wonder how far this thing is going to go and how real is it? We're joined by someone I've interviewed many times over the years. I love the work that they do down there at the Southern Poverty Law Center. He's the senior fellow, Mark Potok, joins us. How you doing, Mark?
Very well. Thanks for having me.
Long time no see. So what, is this for real, the Anonymous Operation KKK? Are these people, I mean, have you checked out any of these allegations about the KKK?
Well, no, not in a direct way. I mean, look, first of all, yesterday, supposedly the real Anonymous denied that this was them and basically suggested that this was some kind of maverick hacker acting on his or her own or some other small group. So we don't know, but already we have Anonymous saying that's not us.
So Anonymous is saying that the other Anonymous is a fake Anonymous, which is
something like that. That's
that
right.
Anonymous. Yeah, right.
In any case, regardless of that, look, I mean, yesterday, you know, the news came that the allegation was that four different U.S. senators were members of the Klan, along with five mayors of major cities around the country. And while I certainly don't know, I don't have any reason whatsoever to think that any one of those four senators is a member of the Klan. And I think it more or less defies logic. You know, look, even if a U.S. senator had those views, had such white supremacist views that they felt like joining the Klan, it seems to me extremely difficult to imagine that that person would take the unbelievable chance of joining a group that, if his or her membership were exposed, would completely end that person's political career.
I totally agree with your logic, and I'm glad to say that I believe that Anonymous has now revealed Anonymous to be fake. But what about the KKK generally? Is it still alive and well, or is it become
alive,
a real tiny fringe
well.
Group? What's happening?
It's alive, but not well. I mean, look, the kind of historical comparison is the peak of the numerical peak of the Klan during the so-called second era of the Klan, the mid-1920s. There were 4 million members, approximately, of the Klan at a time, obviously, when the country was much smaller in total than it is today. The next peak, the third era Klan, came during the Civil Rights Movement. Around 1965, the peak membership then was around 40,000. Today, our best estimate is that there are perhaps 4,000 members, and those members are not in a single organization. In fact, there is no one Klan anymore, as there used to be back in the 1920s. At the moment, there are about 23 different named Klan organizations into which these 4,000 people are parceled out. And those organizations spend virtually as much time attacking one another as they do their purported enemies.
I got that.
Yeah, I mean, right now we've got a Klan leader accusing another Klan leader of being secretly Jewish, and you know, which is almost certainly baloney.
I knew it. I knew he was Jewish.
Par for the course.
I could see that nose through the hood. So I want to change the subject. You've seen the video of this biker chewed out. What's going on with these bikers? Have they become a new mafia? What's motivating
them? I'm sorry, are you talking about the biker shootout in Texas, in Waco?
Yes.
Well, I mean, look, we don't really study bikers per se, although some outlaw biker gangs have, you know, one thing I'd say that's been a bit of a phenomenon in the last few years is that some outlaw biker gangs have increasingly been tied up with white supremacists, and that wasn't always true. Probably a part of that is the very strong white supremacist nexus in the world of methamphetamine. Methamphetamine is, you know, very much a white people's drug, by and large, although I guess that's changed to some extent in recent years. And it has been controlled by white prison gangs and other white supremacists for quite a long time. So to the extent that there's a fair amount of methamphetamine in the kind of hardline bikers world, I think we're seeing that nexus kind of solidify.
All right, I got it. Mark Potok, I appreciate the update. Thank you very much. I'm glad that we don't have four sitting U.S. senators and five mayors of major cities who are secretly members of the KKK. Thank you for debunking that.
Mark, a real pleasure. Thank you.
All right, buddy. The other thing, Noam, I wanted to talk about, and I don't even know where you stand on this, but you have a big situation. You had some votes in Houston, the fourth largest city. They voted to abolish a civil rights bill that gave rights to transgender people. And the reason was because of this controversy that's sweeping the nation now about transgender kids. So here you have a transgender boy, a biological boy, who says he identifies as a girl, but he still has the hardware of a boy. Which restroom does that transgender boy use? Now, there's all kinds of lawsuits now. There's all kinds of in Chicago right now, they've got a situation where the education department gave school officials 30 days at one suburban high school to resolve a dispute about a transgender student identifying as a girl who wanted to shower and change in the girl's locker room, but still has, you know, a penis attached. You know, it is, what do you do about that? Now, you have California, Washington, Colorado, Connecticut, Massachusetts, Washington, D.C., and here in New York, they've already adopted policies that require schools to permit the transgender student to use the bathroom or locker room based on their gender identity. But if you were a parent of a kid who's not transgender, how would you feel if you're a girl student and you've got a transgender boy who now has the right to use their locker room and their bathroom? I don't know, is that wig you out at all?
You know, look, I think if you look at it at the most simplistic level, and I understand why somebody would be upset about this whole bathroom thing, but wasn't this ordinance more about giving rights to people who are transgendered so they wouldn't be ostracized in the workplace, they'd be protected in places like that? It was more about that than
no,
the
I
bathrooms.
Know what the intent is. Well, we're talking here about the execution. What the intent doesn't trump, in the small t sense, doesn't
right.
trump the dilemma that you have a physical boy who wants to use a girl's bathroom and locker room, who now under a Title IX or whatever the justification, some civil rights ordinance, has the right to do that. If, you know, I'm not saying that there are abuses. I don't know. I'm sure that with government, as with everything else, I'm sure that there are people who say one thing and mean another. But what would you do? I mean, are you okay with it, first of all?
You know,
well, you don't have girls. You don't have
well,
girls.
No. You know, and I have two close friends who've jumped to the other side. One going from
who's that? Who have actually made the physical
yeah,
change?
Yeah, one from a woman to a man, and one from a man to a woman. So I've got to see it pretty up close. That said, and while I love them both dearly, and I just loved them beforehand and love them afterhand, it's, you know, when it comes to this whole idea of somebody who's in the process of transitioning using a bathroom when they're clearly a male and going into a women's bathroom, I understand why the women would be wigged out, no doubt, and the other way around as well. So I don't have an answer. I don't know. I don't know what to do in this case.
I think it is, brave new world. I think until you get your hardware adjusted, then you are what you were born. I am totally in. If you want to make that change and you've got real medical reasons or even deeply psychological reasons, that's up to you. But Bruce Jenner and Caitlyn Jenner will be Bruce Jenner to me until he goes through that surgery. To me, you've got to pick a lane in life. And the fact that you say you identify as this or that, I'm a boy, I'm a girl, I'm a Republican, I'm a Democrat, I'm a socialist, I'm a capitalist, those are all life choices, but the evidence, proof's in the pudding. That's the way I see it.
She uses the women's bathroom, right?
Why did I bring that up, even? Why did I bring it up?
I don't know.
Because I teased it at 10 o'clock, and I promised to bring it up. And I said, oh, damn, I'm running out of time. I better talk about it
now.
Well,
does Caitlin use the women's bathroom? I guess she does, right?
Caitlin uses women's everything now.
But she hasn't had the snip-snip yet. Is that what you're
saying? I haven't had the snip-snip, and therefore will always be the man I knew.
I'm not half the man I used to be.
I didn't call for that song. Caitlin Jenner is sending this out to you. So I was thinking, if there was a mayoral debate and de Blasio was facing a Republican, who would, they're talking about biased moderators. I would get Curtis Sliwa on the mayoral debate because he loves the mayor so much. You would ask.
I despise him. I hate him. Go back to Boston.
Why do you hate him so much? Why do you hate him so much?
He's not a true New Yorker. Like Bill Bratton, he's not a New Yorker, but he'll tell you. I never follow baseball. I don't claim to be a Boston Red Sox fan or a Yankee or a Met fan. But here's de Blasio, right? On a night when Met fans are like ready to take Mike Piazza's shredded bat and impale themselves, and he's tweeting away. I used to be a Boston Red Sox. Meantime, it's some Fugazi tweeting for him. I mean, the guy
ladies and gentlemen, that story. De Blasio, really, with vivid and eloquent tweets, very passionate. It later turns out that the mayor wasn't writing his own tweets. It was some aide. He had no idea. The mayor had no idea about the context or the content, he says, of the tweets. But he didn't even do it himself, and that's one of the reasons. But that isn't, is it insincerity, Curtis, that you think people don't like?
Completely, because remember, what are you talking about? There are not more rats in the street. There are not more homeless people in the street. There's not more crime. People, they go out into the streets. They have eyes. They have ears. Their senses get attacked. But every time he says that, he is saying, even to his own constituents, blacks and Hispanics, who overwhelmingly elected him, you don't know what you're talking about. He's so pretentious. He needs to get out into the streets. Look at that one town hall meeting he had in Washington Heights. Nobody was invited. The only people invited were his sycophants, toadies, and lackeys. What kind of a town hall meeting is that? So his poll numbers are dropping because he is isolating himself more and more, Geraldo. He is not a New Yorker, and he has no sense of this city. And he's using us. He's pimping off of us for his national agenda.
And yet, Curtis Sliwa, our guest, you have no opponents raising their heads. Just 2 years to go till the next race. Not a person's name is mentioned, certainly not on the Republican side, nor even a Democrat to challenge.
Geraldo, just look at Andrew Evil Eyes Cuomo, King Cuomo II, son of Mario Faccia Bruta Cuomo, King Cuomo I. He wants to settle all scores with Bill. He's got a bunch of his own stoolies and his own puppets ready to go to primary de Blasio.
Primary de Blasio, what a concept. Maybe we'll get more than 24% of New Yorkers to vote. Curtis, thank you. Mr. Layden, what are you going to do for the rest of this beautiful day? Where'd he go?
Oh, no, he just took a bird. He just took a bird.
I was so taken
by Curtis's
words.
I'm going for a boat ride.
He's overwhelmed by what I had to say.
Geraldo here for Advanced Urology Centers of New York.
Menards 11% rebate is here. From lighting to lumber, from doors to floors, the bigger the project, the bigger the rebate. From painting projects to that new kitchen makeover and designing that outdoor space of your dreams, save big on any project you're tackling. Hurry into Menards for an 11% rebate on everything. Mail-in rebate is a merchandise credit check, not a point-of-sale discount. Redeemable on future in-store purchases only. Not on future purchases on Menards.com. See store for details.
Save big money at Menards.
Hello, America. It's your new favorite podcast here.
Yes, it's James and Andy, two forts of the British podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We do facts. We do weird facts, fun facts, facts you've never heard before. James, give us a fact.
Did you know you may be able to cure chronically blocked noses with a snot transplant?
Lovely, lovely facts.
If you want to hear us, go to wherever you get your podcasts and search for No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We'll see you there.